Welcome to Podcasts, recorded live at the Center for Spiritual Living in Portland, Oregon. We have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the Online tab. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its video podcast, you can donate online at cslportland.org/donate. Allow us to become part of your extended spiritual community. Wherever you are on your spiritual journey, you are most welcome at the Center for Spiritual Living.
The power of one, and one, and one, and a couple hundred million ones. All right. Well, that's kind of what we're talking about today. We're talking about peace. Because peace is one of those universal desires, right? Everyone, all the peoples of the world declare a desire for peace. No doubt the people living in the Gaza Strip, Ukraine, Sudan, Syria, desperate for peace. Yes. And the people of Israel and Russia want peace. Some people are so committed and so desirous of bringing peace into the world that they commit their whole lives to it. We have ministers and centers for spiritual living whose entire ministry is about revealing peace. Some of you work with those ministers, and thank you for your work. There are public officials around the world who devote their entire careers to peace. There are musicians who are committed to peace, and artists, and on and on. It's something we all want more of inside, in our families, in our communities, and in our world. Here in the U.S., we talk a lot about wanting to come together as one nation and unite. So many of us are tired of the divisiveness. And so much of what we hear and see and do and say is not peace-like. And I'll admit, I've been guilty of this myself in some of my personal interactions. Not my highest moments. Not the best language I could have used. And what we see so much in the world and here in these times is divisive rhetoric, deliberate attempts to make us fearful of the others, to keep us divided, demonizing language, from one party, from each party to the other party, dehumanizing language, violent rhetoric when discussing public policy, and emotional and spiritual violence to justify one's worldview. Just a couple days ago, we had an example of this when the National Park Service removed T from LGBT and removed all references to transgendered people at the Stonewall National Monument. As if they're saying to some groups of people, not just at this one example, but so many examples, we're telling people, your history doesn't matter. Your contribution doesn't matter. You don't even exist, or you have no right to exist. This is emotional and spiritual violence. And for the example at Stonewall, the fact that the L is still there, believe me, gives me no comfort. Not as long as some of our family is left out. so we can do better. I know we can do better. I've gotten better at this, and I'll share a story about this later, where I became aware of my contributing to the divisiveness and decided to overcome it. But we can all do better. We can all contribute to the peace that we keep saying that we want. And one major tool that we need for this is nonviolence. Not just nonviolence in our actions, as in refraining from physical violence. That's probably not too hard for most of us. For most of us, perhaps the bigger challenge is nonviolence in our minds and our hearts and our thoughts and attitudes. So that's what we need to develop in us for these times, when so much of the violence we're experiencing is not physical violence. There has been physical violence, and there might be more of it, but there's also this emotional and spiritual and cultural violence. Now, when we think nonviolence, very often here in the United States, we think of the great Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the Civil Rights Movement. And of course, before that was Gandhi in India, who used nonviolent practices as a way to secure India's freedom from British rule. And nonviolence looks like sit-ins, marches, stoicism in the face of violent attacks, but that's what it looks like. What is the philosophy behind nonviolence? The philosophy is very relevant to us because every great proponent of nonviolence that we look at was rooted in spiritual principle. Gandhi in India was rooted in the Hindu philosophy of non-injury and the Hindu philosophy of truth force or love force. And Gandhi wrote, "Nonviolence and truth are inseparable and presuppose one another," which means that to reside in truth, and Gandhi meant spiritual truth, to reside in truth is to be nonviolent. And to be nonviolent is to reside in spiritual truth. And for Gandhi, nonviolence was not only, like I said, refraining from physical act, but he was very clear that we must be nonviolent in our minds. And then we have Howard Thurman, who we're going to see a movie about this afternoon. Howard Thurman taught that nonviolence must be rooted in an inner knowing, an absolute security and conviction in the truth that God loves us, each and every single one of us. Which means not only does God love me, but God loves the person I perceive as my opponent. And Thurman was so sure of this that he knew and taught that if we could be that secure on the inside of God's love for us, that we will not be able to disrespect somebody else. And Thurman taught that nonviolence was refraining or refusing to cooperate with anything that is against life and therefore against God. So what that meant in practice for Thurman was, if we are confronting some sort of violence, whether it be physical violence, verbal violence, emotional violence, if we react in violence, we're feeding that person's violent behavior. We are degrading our own soul, and we are degrading their soul because we are refusing to see God's love in them. So nonviolence is refusing to cooperate with that. And for Dr. King, nonviolence was rooted in agape love. That love of God within us and for us. It is the kind of love that expects nothing from the person we give it to. It is love for the sake of love. It is love because we recognize I'm going to love that person because God loves that person. He also taught that while nonviolence is not physically aggressive, it is spiritually aggressive. And that the goal of nonviolence was not to defeat or humiliate the opponent, but to win them over, to win their friendship and understanding. And lastly, Dr. King was very clear that the nonviolent method is not about being against certain people or individual. It was about being for justice and equality and freedom. He wrote, "Nonviolent resistance is also an internal matter. It not only avoids external violence or external physical violence, but also internal violence of spirit. And so at the center of our movement stood the philosophy of love, agape love. Biblical theologians would say it is the love of God working in the minds of men. It is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. And when you come to love on this level, you begin to love men not because they are likable, not because they do things that attract us, but because God loves them." So from these three great teachers of nonviolence, it's clear that nonviolence is a spiritual path. It's a spiritual path because it's rooted in divine love. It's a spiritual path because it's us refusing to be part of the problem, which is violence begets violence. And it's a spiritual path because it's for divine truth of justice and goodness and equity while being against no person. Nonviolence, also from this teachers, we learn that again, it's not only our acts, it's our thoughts, our attitudes, our beliefs. And we must have that inner sense of nonviolence because it's impossible to act peacefully in the world and towards those we interact with if inside we're harboring some secret desire that, you know, they kind of maybe deserve some sort of harm. If we're having that inside us, then it's going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to act in a peaceful manner. Nonviolence says to our opponent, "I see your divinity. I see your dignity. I see your worthiness." And it lets them see that truth about themselves. It makes it harder for them to continue the destructive behavior. And this is why Dr. King taught that it was the only way to go. And if we can do that, then we might get that understanding and that friendship that Dr. King hoped for. So that's what nonviolence is. And to return to Thurman, of course, it's an inside job. We hear that a lot around here, right? What we do in spiritual living is an inside job. Man, we have a lot to say about that. We teach a lot about it, right? You got to do your shadow work. You got to do your healing. You got to get to the root of those false beliefs and clean them up. We do a lot of inside work here, and we need to do inside work to act in nonviolent and peaceful ways. You know, Thurman, being a mystic, he knew what it was like to commune with the divine. And he was adamant, in a peaceful way, he was adamant that if we want to have peace in the world and we want to act from nonviolence, we have to engage in regular spiritual practice. Time spent communing with the God within to remember that we are loved. That is the root of all of it. So we need time and meditation in contemplation, in prayer. It's one of the big reasons we teach that so much around here. It's one of the big reasons why I mention it so often from this platform. Because we can do nothing we want to do in the world or see none of the good we want to see in the world if we don't first have it inside us. We need to do that inner work so we are so secure, as Thurman thought and taught. We are so secure in the love of the divine that we couldn't even contemplate disrespecting our own souls by committing violence. And we refuse to cooperate with anyone in degrading their soul. Thurman, and speaking of the need to develop this inside ourselves, wrote in one of his Meditations from the Heart, "I want to be more loving in my heart. It is often easy to see it with my mind and give assent to the thought of being loving, but I want to be more loving in my heart. So I must ease the tension in my heart that ejects the sharp barb, the stinging word. I want to be more loving in my heart so that through my unconscious awareness and deliberate intent, I shall be a kind, gracious human being. I want to be more loving in my heart." We cannot give what we don't have. So we must cultivate peace and love and nonviolence in our hearts. So we can be, as the Dalai Lama summed all this up, quite simply but profoundly, nonviolence is the reflection of inner peace. And as we embark on this path of nonviolence and spreading and revealing more peace, we need to know and believe and have the conviction that it is the way. It is the only way. We all know at some level that violence and arguing and demeaning and conflict, the hurtful language, only gives us very temporary wins. None of it is lasting. Because as we know, hurt people hurt, violence begets violence, hate begets hate. None of that is going to give us lasting peace. As Dr. King wrote, "The aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community, while the aftermath of violence is tragic bitterness." The only path to peace is peace. Gandhi knew this, Thurman knew this, King knew this, Thich Nhat Hanh knew this, Mother Teresa of Calcutta knew this, right? Pema Chodron of today knows that, and we know this. These were all people of great spiritual conviction, and many of them were so committed and so convinced that nonviolence was the only path to peace that they refused to abandon it even in the face of very violent, great violence against them. Gandhi, in 1893 in South Africa, was taking a train to his new job, his first job as an attorney, and he had bought a first-class ticket. But on the train, some officials told him that he must ride in the third-class carriage due to the segregation laws of South Africa based on race. Well, he refused to do this, was kicked off the train. He was so upset by this experience that he became a very vocal, outspoken opponent of those laws in South Africa based in racial segregation. And because he was such a vocal opponent, he angered the white ruling class. A mob came together and attacked him, tried to lynch him. He was near death. And he didn't give up on nonviolence. In fact, he would return to India and develop a huge movement based on nonviolence that eventually secured India's freedom from British rule. Dr. King faced daily threats of violence against himself and his family. His home was even bombed while his daughter and wife and a neighbor were in the home. Still, this man did not give up on nonviolence as the path. He wrote, "One day we must come to see that peace is not merely a distant goal that we seek, but that it is a means by which we arrive at that goal. We must pursue peaceful ends through peaceful means." And then the great Congressman John Lewis, who was very often by Dr. King's side, years later would say, "I thought I was going to die a few times. On the Freedom Ride in the year 1961, when I was beaten at the Greyhound bus station in Montgomery, I thought I was going to die. On March 7th, 1965, when I was hit in the head with the nightstick by a state trooper at the foot of the Edmund Pettus Bridge, I thought I was going to die. I thought I saw death, but nothing can make me question the philosophy of nonviolence." These men faced great physical violence, and still they stuck with nonviolence as the path. Now, some of us may be thinking, but things are different today. We're not facing police in the streets with fire hoses and nightsticks. There has been violence, and there might be violence again. And today, like I said, we have violence in our communications, in our public rhetoric, in our public policies, and it's all based in violent thoughts and beliefs. We need nonviolent practice today if we are to heal our divisions. And peace starts at the individual level. We can't look to those high-level officials to do this. We need to do it. Family member to family member, neighbor to neighbor, co-worker to co-worker, if we want the peace we say we desire. Now, I promise you a story about my own experience in this. I noticed a few years ago that my communications with a family member who I care about and love a great deal, but we happen to be on opposite sides of the political spectrum, I noticed, wow, man, our communications, they're hard. I mean, we were mean to each other. It got to the point where I thought, I don't want to be associated with this person. I might have to cut them off. I don't know if I can go to a family gathering if he's going to be there. And when I realized this, I thought, what the heck? This is my beloved family member. What has happened? And then, of course, I had to admit I was part of the problem. Because that relationship and that communication was two-sided. And when I realized I was on the verge of cutting them out of my life, that's when I committed. I'm like, I gotta do something. So I actively sought out how to communicate in nonviolent ways. And I tried it on them. I don't know if you knew what I was doing. But for the next several interactions, before I met with him, I did some prayer work and said, okay, you're going to have to spend some time with this person. You can do this. And I started asking him questions where my only motive was to understand him. I had no agenda to convince him he was wrong, no agenda to change his mind. I only wanted to understand. And you know what? It worked. He responded. I still don't know if he was conscious of what I was doing, but it did not take long at all before he responded. And I'll say, We have a wonderful relationship now. We still disagree on just about everything in the political realm. But we can now at least be at the same holiday gathering. Actually, we could do more than that. We call each other up just because we like talking to each other now. And we even venture into some political conversations. Those are still a little difficult, but they're getting easier. We both now recognize when it's getting a little too heated, and we both back off, and sometimes we even apologize. So this works. That's just one small example. And those of us who practice science of mind, what we teach here, we are perfectly suited for nonviolent as a spiritual path, because our spiritual principles are in perfect alignment with what all of these great teachers are teaching us. We know God loves everyone, no matter what, right? We know every single human being is an expression of the divine, with beauty and wisdom and truth and freedom and love at their core. We know God works in the world through its creation, which means us. In our vision, a world that works for everyone leaves no one out. It includes even those we disagree with, even those who have hurt us in some way, and even those that we might believe are working against our common interest. We do not leave them out. Nonviolence is how we get there. Peace is how we get there. So how do we build up our nonviolence practice? Well, first of all, you can sign up for our small groups that start next week, right? It's no coincidence that this is all happening right now. Sometimes I do listen to you all into the spirit, right? So sign up for the small groups. We're going to explore more about peace and nonviolence and what it means for us and our community in these times. We can be in spiritual community where we remember the truth and we are fed and lift each other up. We can share what we're doing to implement nonviolence, and perhaps very importantly, we can admit when we fail, show ourselves some grace, and commit to begin again. You know, recently I was reading a short passage from our founder, Ernest Holmes, and it started with, "Have we ever really tried God? Everything else we have tried has not worked. Have you ever really tried God?" Which is to say, have you ever really tried love? That's what we're about. That's the only thing that will get us there, and we need it now. Thank you. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you happen to be in the Portland, Oregon area, we'd love to have you visit in person. The Portland Center for Spiritual Living is located at 6211 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Our inspirational service is at 11 a.m. every Sunday. We also have many programs, classes, and workshops developed just for our online audience. To find out more, go to our website at cslportland.org and look under the online tab. We have a variety of content dedicated specifically for our podcast listeners. Our mission is to open hearts, ignite minds, and make a difference. If you'd like to support our center and its podcasts,